This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, May 28th, 2014. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Karnatz. Fort Smith's Riverfront Blues Festival celebrates its 24th year with headliners Paul Thorne, Lil Ed and the Blue Imperials, June 20th and 21st at Harry E. Kelly Park in downtown Fort Smith. Other performers include Samantha Fish, Blind Boy Paxton, Jigsaw Mudd, and more. Tickets and more information available online at riverfrontbluesfest.org.
KUAF will broadcast Mozart in the Museum live from Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art tonight at 8 o'clock. Hosted by KUAF's Kyle Kellums and Katie Henriksen, this evening's live broadcast will feature the Artisphere Festival Orchestra, interviews, and more. This live radio event is made possible in part by contributing listeners of KUAF Public Radio. You can support programming like this at supportkuaf.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, highlights from a lecture given by David Pryor last night in downtown Fayetteville. Also, the region's population prepares to reach the 500,000 mark.
Those stories and more. But first, Maya Angelou, one of the most famous poets in the world and a former Arkansas resident, is dead at the age of 86. She experienced a childhood of poverty and segregation and wrote about that experience and others in her book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. She also delivered the poem at President Bill Clinton's first inauguration in 1993.
A rock, a river, a tree, hosts to species long since departed, marked the mastodon, the dinosaur, who left dry tokens of their sojourn here on our planet floor. Any broad alarm of their hastening doom is lost in the gloom of dust and ages.
Maya Angelou was scheduled to speak at the Fayetteville Public Library last month, but had to cancel because of illness. She won 3 Grammy Awards and was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, a Tony Award, and an Emmy Award for her work in the miniseries Roots.
The Walmart Foundation is giving $50,000 to LifeSource International of Fayetteville to support its food pantry program, which helps feed more than 3,000 people each month in Northwest Arkansas. The U.S. Census Bureau predicts that by 2015, Northwest Arkansas will exceed Pulaski County in the number of people facing food insecurity each month. According to LifeSource International, the organization serves more than 55,000 people in the region through programs including its food pantry and adult education classes.
Housing prices are on the rise in Arkansas, uncharacteristically outpacing the national rate. A report released yesterday from the Federal Housing Finance Agency shows Arkansas house prices rose 1.6%, while the national rate is 1.4%. Michael Paco with the University of Arkansas Little Rock's Institute for Economic Advancement says the rate for the first quarter of 2014 is a departure from what he characterizes as a sluggish 2013.
It's a really an important indicator at this point in the maturing economic recovery that we see house prices rebounding. It's both a symptom of higher demand and also a precursor to even stronger growth.
He says the rise in housing prices signals potential growth for construction, which has lagged behind other sectors in recent years. The report shows the effect has been uneven throughout the state, but markets hit hardest during the recession, like Northwest Arkansas, are also experiencing the most rapid appreciation in prices.
The Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality is hosting a meeting today about new carbon standards existing power plants will have to meet. A draft of emission limits is to be released next week. Glenn Hooks with the Sierra Club of Arkansas says it's significant because it's the first time CO2 limits have been imposed.
I think it's going to be a dramatic improvement in the air quality in Arkansas and the rest of the nation. Just for example, Entergy has an older, dirtier coal-fired power plant in Redfield called White Bluff. Every year, that plant alone spews out almost 12 million metric tons of carbon dioxide pollution. Well, think about all the power plants we have in Arkansas that are doing that type of pollution and all the power plants around the country that are doing that type of pollution. If we can limit that, it's a huge first step into cleaning up our air.
At today's meeting, which is at ADEQ headquarters in North Little Rock, stakeholders, like the power companies that will have to retrofit their plants, will weigh in on the limits.
The University of Arkansas is adding a new program designed to aid professionals seeking to improve writing skills. The Graduate Certificate in Technical Writing and Public Rhetorics will be a four-course program offered beginning this summer. The courses will be available both on campus and online. The university says the courses are intended for individuals employed in technical, business, government, and not-for-profit arenas.
The Symphony of Northwest Arkansas will soon be under new leadership of a new executive director. SONA announced yesterday Matthew Heron will take over for outgoing director Karen Capella beginning July 1st. He previously served as the orchestra's personnel manager and associate principal cello. He has 2 degrees from the Juilliard School. He will begin working on a transition with Capella next month.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals continue a 3-game series in San Antonio tonight after dropping a 3-2 decision to the Missions last night. The Nats remain away from home until Tuesday, June 3rd, when they return to Springdale for a game against Tulsa.
Cloudy skies tonight with a slight chance of showers or thunderstorms, overnight lows between 60 and 65 degrees. Tomorrow, Thursday, a 40% chance of rain with highs from 79 to 83. Tomorrow evening, a 30% chance of showers or thunderstorms, lows in the mid-60s.
This is Ozarks at Large. David Pryor served more than 24 years in Washington as a senator and representative for Arkansas's 4th District. Between his stints in either chamber, Pryor also served as the 39th governor of Arkansas. In conjunction with the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, he gave a lecture last night at the University of Arkansas Global Campus in downtown Fayetteville. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis attended the lecture, and he has this report.
The dysfunction of Congress was the topic of last night's lecture. Pryor said that the topic is on the minds of many in the nation.
Today, about 85% of the American people say that our Congress is dysfunctional. That's not a very good record for this particular Congress, but it is the record that most people believe in. It is the record that most people adhere to. And it is something that I think our time and our generation, we have got to address.
He said that Congress now has the lowest approval rating in history. According to Gallup polls, Congress's approval rate was about 15% in March. To further explain how he feels Congress got in its current position, Pryor explained that throughout the political history of the U.S., certain statements by political leaders have taken on lives of their own.
Martin Luther King, I have a dream. FDR, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Al Haig, I'm in charge here. Ronald Reagan, tear down this wall, Mr. Gorbachev. Lloyd Benson, when he was with Dan Quayle debating, Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy. We all remember that statement. But tonight, for a few minutes, I hope you'll allow me to paraphrase and expand on another famous statement delivered by a very famous man, Speaker Tip O'Neill. His admonition when he made the statement, all politics is local. I'd like to take Tip O'Neill's statement and expand it. When he said all politics is local, I maintain all politics is personal.
He posited that politics are personal on all levels of government, from municipal to state to national. But Pryor says that that relationship between those who govern and the governed is being lost.
Blame the Democrats. Blame the Republicans. Blame Nancy Pelosi. Blame the president. Blame the lawyers. Blame the preachers. Blame the media. Blame the courts. Blame the Tea Party. Blame everyone you'd like to blame and everything you can think of. But the truth is, there's enough blame to go around. There's an abundance of blame to go around. At the bottom line is, down in Winslow this morning, I'm sure there was somebody sitting around on a bench saying, we're in a fix. And we are in a fix. The government, to function, has got to have one thing to function properly, and that's the trust of its people.
Pryor says that in order for the government to carry out its business, like providing for the general welfare of the nation and maintaining national defense, it must have the trust of the public, which he says is slowly being lost. To give more insight, Pryor compared what is happening in Congress today to how the legislature operated when he was in Washington.
Today, in the House and the Senate, they meet less and less. They vote fewer times each week and each month. Recorded votes are becoming more rare with each passing day. There's still 535 people in the House and Senate that compose our Congress, as we call them. The numbers have not changed, but I can tell you the political environment is very, very different today than it was 20 or 25 years ago.
He said that there are several root causes as to how Congress got into its current dysfunctional environment.
When a member of the U.S. House of Representatives is elected to Congress today, 2 years later, he has to go through that same election, and the day after election, that new member of Congress, most of the time, will start his campaign anew by raising money. The morning after the election, they start fundraising for the cycle. Almost some of the same senatorial Senate seats are today costing millions and millions of dollars.
While the senior Pryor avoided making a campaign speech for his son's ongoing re-election bid, he did say that the current Senate campaign will likely be the most expensive political race in Arkansas political history. But the rising expense of campaigning isn't limited to Arkansas. Pryor says that the ballooning cost of running for office is happening across the country. And with the rising cost of campaigning comes the need for members of Congress to jet set around the country to raise the funds necessary for a successful campaign and return to Washington for votes through the middle of the week, only to repeat the cycle with every passing week.
They're trapped today in a web which has become more vicious with each passing election. They're running in place. They are today on a human treadmill. And I don't see anything that's going to slow that treadmill down. The real winners today are the TV stations. They love all this because they're going to make a huge amount of money this year like they have never made before. Senators and congressmen don't have a chance to know one another.
Aside from politicians not having the chance to know one another anymore, Pryor said that another great change in the environment in Washington lies in the greater number of lobbyists who are now active in that city.
25,000 people today are registered as lobbyists in Washington. I like lobbyists. I don't have anything wrong. I think lobbying is a necessary part of our system. But to have 25,000 lobbyists registered and 535 individuals to lobby, you can see that the imbalance is pretty grave.
Pryor also credited the emergence of dark money, or campaign contributions in which the source is legally concealed from the public, as instrumental in changing the political landscape throughout the country.
Usually it's into a Senate race or a House race, but now it's coming into school board and mayor's races. It's coming in at the local level. And there are groups so powerful and so wealthy and so focused on controlling our governmental system that they are willing at the ground level to begin making their mark and beginning their hope that they will achieve control and power in this particular field.
He said that with the Supreme Court's 5-4 decision in Citizens United, a decision that was split along party lines, outside groups are funneling money into rural states like Arkansas and Mississippi, where the cost of television advertisements and thus the cost of entering the political machine is still low when compared to other states like New Jersey. To give another example of how politics is no longer personal, Pryor said that during his time in Congress, members from both sides of the aisle met for potluck suppers every Sunday night.
Democrats and Republicans, can you imagine this? Went to each other's home, and we had potluck suppers, and we visited with one another. We knew their children, they knew ours, we knew their dogs, we knew their parakeets, we knew everything about them as a family and as people. But today, that does not happen. A Republican home or apartment one Sunday night, a Democrat home or apartment the next Sunday night, people, liberal, conservative, whatever, this does not happen. And that is something that helped us to bond as colleagues and friends. And there is no red state, there is no blue state ever discussed at these Sunday night suppers. Politics was personal at that time, and it's got to be personal again.
Pryor said that what came from those Sunday night suppers was relationships between senators, congressmen, and their families. But now that those suppers are a thing of the past, Pryor says that there is a lack of personal relationships between members of the House and Senate and their colleagues on the other side of the aisle. To describe how personal relationships were once a normal part of politics, Pryor told a story about one night he shared on the Senate floor with the then freshman senator, Dan Quayle.
I watched this young senator, and he was pacing the floor, and he was going to Bob Dole, and he was going to Howard Baker, and he was saying, are we going to get out anytime soon? Are we going to? So I went over to the Republican side, and I said, Dan, what's wrong with you? He said, well, my 12-year-old son is getting ready in 30 minutes to play for the Little League Championship out in Maryland. And the leadership tells me there are going to be at least four or five more votes tonight. And they're keeping us here on the floor. I said, Dan, go to that ball game. There will be no more votes tonight on the Senate floor. And Dan Quayle says, how do you know that? I says, because I'm getting ready to get the floor, and I'm going to protect you, and I'm going to filibuster until you get back. And so that was the case. He left, and sure enough, that ended the session for the night, and we voted, as we should have, in daylight the next day.
Pryor said that perhaps because of that relationship, Dan Quayle never came to Arkansas to help campaign against him. Pryor said that that idea of members of Congress not campaigning against their colleagues has fallen by the wayside along with the personal relationships in Congress. As a result, Pryor says that the art of true negotiations in Washington has suffered.
Because it was at the negotiating table, the attitude was, let's find a way where we can all win. Today, let's find a way where we win and you lose. That's not the way our founding fathers set this system up. The spirit of compromise has forged America's greatest decisions on Social Security, Medicare, GI Bill, Marshall Plan, think of it, civil rights, each born from compromise, and tedious negotiation, understanding, and all in very, very good faith.
Pryor likened what is happening in Washington to coring an apple, and that Washington's middle core is being hollowed out and thrown away. As a result, some of the current frustration in the country is caused by the debates relating to the filibuster rule.
Today, one senator has the power to bring the Senate to a dead end. The normal number of filibusters starting about 1915 was about one, two, maybe three a year, and it gradually moved up the scale and up the scale. This session of Congress alone, 128 cloture petitions have been filed to close off debate and get around the filibuster rule. I truly believe that today we are going to have to address the filibuster rule. And the Senate, though it has protected minorities, it has protected us in many instances, but I think today it has been abused to the extent that we're going to have to look very, very closely at doing away with it.
He said that Congress didn't get into its current dysfunction all at once, but rather it was caused by evolution over time.
Some believe that it was the scorching debate over civil rights that did us in. Some think it was the confirmation hearing of Judge Bork a few years back, or maybe the searing hearing in the Senate over Clarence Thomas. Others say it was the impeachment trial of William Jefferson Clinton that brought the outrage that destroyed the lasting civility honored by time in the United States Senate and the House of Representatives. Well, remember, there are 20,000 lobbyists in Washington, and each one has a cause. Remember the Citizens United decision of 3 years ago opened the spigots for unlimited flow of what we call today dark money. We don't know who is giving that money. We don't know for what purpose that money is being spent. We don't know the donors. All we know that it is dark. And we're seeing a sign of that darkness today.
But finding solutions to fix what ails Congress is, as Pryor said, the hard part.
As you know, when Will Rogers was confronted about all those German U-boats out there in the Atlantic, he said, oh, that's simple. There's a simple way to deal with those U-boats. And they said, well, Will, how do we do it? We can't find them. He says, drain the ocean. Well, we can't drain the ocean today, nor can we step back and recreate what we have ever had, because it will never be the same.
Pryor said that a first step in solving Congress's dysfunction could be tackling campaign finance reform. In addition, he said that shortening election cycles from their continuous nature and abolishing the filibuster rule are other possible fixes to the regular stalemate in Washington. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
It's been 5 years since the Great Recession officially rattled the nation's financial markets. The fallout for banks was a roller coaster that started with a big free fall before a slow and steady climb back to normal, whatever normal may be defined as these days. Recently, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business and Politics discussed the state of the state's lending environment with three bankers: Carol Pinnick of Delta Trust and Bank, Frank Scott with First Security Bank, and Paula Jean with Arvest Bank.
I want a picture of what it's like out there on the streets right now, and what in terms of how robust or not robust commercial lending activity is, particularly in what you've seen in the past few years. How would you describe where we're at now?
Well, I'd say now we have recovered some. You know, it's not like it was. You know, I used to be scared of the word spec home loans, but yet now I actually have made a couple of spec home loans this year, so we're actually starting to get back in that business. And I see a little more demand like that, but yet people are willing to borrow money now that might not have 18 months ago. So yeah. I think it's better.
Where does demand, Paul, come to you, where does demand kind of stand in terms of your perspective versus what you've seen over the last couple of years? Is it up as well for you?
Yes, it's rising. In fact, particularly in the areas of commercial construction, renovation, and single family housing, we're seeing increases in demand in those areas.
And Frank, you've talked a lot. I think when I asked you for some comment on this for a magazine article where they did, you also mentioned some of those same kind of projects that that Paula did, but you also had a heck of a lot more in terms of that. So, I mean, why do you think it's so robust? I mean, why do you think there's such a variety of it? Why is it not a little bit more specified?
Well, I think everyone's seeing a steady stream of flow, of deal flow, and it's from everything you can imagine, whether it's residential home construction, whether it's owner-occupied deals. There are also a lot of multifamily deals. You can just look right out here, in particularly Little Rock on Main Street, all the different things that are going on there with that revitalization. So I think everyone's seeing brighter days right now, and we're all excited about it in the banking community.
Is it pent-up demand? I mean, was this something that was just cobbled up over the last couple of years, or is it there's an economic recovery, it's picked up enough pace now, there's enough people feeling comfortable enough and not so cautious with their money that they
I
feel like...
I think you're exactly right. I think people now are not as cautious. There was a oversupply of certain product that we had financed. Some of that's been absorbed. Some of the banks have absorbed it themselves. And now it's back to, let's go back to something that works financially.
Mm. What does it mean for you guys in terms of paperwork and just the additional regulation that you're having to deal with now? Is that too cumbersome? Is it killing some deals?
Well, our underwriting standards have been traditionally very conservative, so we've not really experienced any changes as a result of that. So that's good.
Yeah, Frank, from your perspective, you're a little newer in the business, a little greener.
Well, I'll definitely say that there has been some increased paperwork due to the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform Act. It definitely poses some issues as how we relate to our customers. And from a technical standpoint, it actually hurts customer service. However, we as bankers want to make sure that we do all that we can for our customer service, for our customers, so they don't see that. So we try to make it as seamless as possible. So
question for all three of you on this one. Are y'all all stealing each other's business, or is it, or is there enough new stuff to go around? I want to go to you first, Paula.
Well, there's definitely a higher competition out there among the banks, but the good news is for Arkansas business owners is they get more favorable loan terms as a result of our competing with each other. So.
Frank, are you taking candy from babies? Is this what this comes down to?
Well, I try not to dive into any type of thievery and things of that nature. But it's all about customer service and how you deal with the relationship. So if you build good relationships, you may take one from a competitor every now and then, but that's okay.
Yeah, Carol?
I think you're right. I think when Wall Street Journal Prime's been the same for 5 to 6 years, all you can sell is customer service. That's right.
All right, Frank, you also wrote, too, in your comments for our magazine article on the commercial lending environment out there, despite what one may hear, the media report banks are lending money. Are you accusing me of not saying that banks aren't lending money?
I'm just talking about those big national media folks.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, is there an advantage for you guys being more locally owned, a community bank, a smaller bank versus, and not to single them out, but, I mean, a Bank of America, a Regions Bank, some of these bigger broader banks, does it help you guys out being more?
I'll touch on that. I think really when you're a true community bank, you understand your community, you understand your customer, and you're able to do different things that a big bank won't be able to do. Sometimes a big bank may look at certain customers as truly as account numbers, but we got to walk into the grocery stores and deal with these people each and every day. So you want to make sure that you give the best service because you've built a great relationship. And if you do that, overall, you're just going to help out the community.
Well, now, and I don't want to hear from my friends at Bank of American Regions, too, but I mean, they know the customers, though, too.
Yeah, but it seems like a community bank, local banks tend to be able to customize their products to fit their community, where a lot of the bigger banks, they're told a policy procedure, here's a box, if it fits in the box, we can do it, and we can do it all day long, but if it doesn't fit in their box, go down the street. Where we community banks, we know what somebody wants, and we sometimes will modify the terms, the structure, just to try to get the deal.
That was Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business and Politics, speaking with Carol Pinnock of Delta Trust and Bank, Frank Scott with First Security Bank, and Paula Jean with Arvest Bank. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
KUAF is supported by the fully remodeled and expanded Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Spark Cafe Soda Fountain. Located on the square in downtown Bentonville and open daily until 9 p.m., including Sundays. 277-8493 or facebook.com/Walmart Museum for more information.
You could win tickets plus camping to the 11th annual Wakarusa Music Festival June 5th through the 8th on Mulberry Mountain in Ozark. Over 150 acts will perform, including the Flaming Lips, Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros, and the John Butler Trio. The winner will be announced May 30th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. That's this Friday. Registration and information are available at KUAF.com.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals 2014 season continues at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. Tickets, game schedule, promotional information, and more available at NWANaturals.com.
The Women's Center at Sparks will offer free health screenings at This and That Thrift Shop's open house from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday. Screenings include blood pressure and bone density scans, as well as information on women's wellness. This and That, located at 1622 Dodson Avenue, offers a wide variety of clothing, books, vinyl records, furniture, and household items. This special open house will also include refreshments and door prizes. The thrift shop is operated by the Sparks Auxiliary, and proceeds fund the complimentary valet services offered to patients and guests at Sparks Regional Medical Center. For more information about the open house, call the thrift shop at 479-782-7641.
It's spring in the Ozarks, and that means it's time to get outdoors. The annual War Eagle Appreciation Day will be held Saturday, June 7th, 2014, at Keith Ham Pavilion at Withrow Springs State Park. That's 5 miles north of Huntsville, just off of Highway 23. Organizers suggest members of the public bring their own lawn chairs to enjoy activities from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Connor Stevens of Austin will provide musical entertainment. Educational exhibits will include some hands-on activities and door prizes. In addition, awards will be given to recognize local watershed stewards. The community float begins at 9 a.m. Shuttle service will be provided, but you must pre-register with the park. To do so, call 479-559-2593.
It was announced yesterday that the Arkansas football team will face Missouri on Friday, November 28th at 1:30 p.m. on CBS the day after Thanksgiving. With Tuesday's announcement, the Razorbacks are set to play on the Friday after Thanksgiving for the 17th time in the last 19 years. Arkansas and Missouri are meeting for the first time as SEC opponents and the sixth time overall. The Razorbacks and Tigers are playing in the regular season for the first time since 1963, with their last two matchups occurring in bowl games, and are playing in Missouri for the first time since a 7-6 Arkansas win in 1944.
This is Christopher Kimball from America's Test Kitchen. This week on our show, I interview the chef at the world's best restaurant, Rene Redzepi of Noma in Copenhagen. An appetizer just might be one live shrimp served on ice. I also learn how to make grown-up butterscotch pudding, and I taste test real versus imitation vanilla extract. Join us this week for America's Test Kitchen from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Listen this Saturday at noon to 91.3 FM.
It is Wednesday, May 28th, 2014, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Karnatz.
And joining us now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
So yesterday we talked about the Gully Park Concert Series.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I like this one even better because, A, it's inside in air conditioning, and, B, it's on Sunday afternoon when my daughter can go with me and loves it. It's 2 o'clock Sundays in the Walker Community Room at the Fayetteville Public Library.
Yes.
The Mountain Street Music
Series starts this weekend with Isaiah's All-Stars, followed by Hogtown Hot Club on June 8th. June 15th, Got It Covered, Dave Bear on June 22nd, Snake Eyes and the Bug Band on June 29th. Oh, she'll love that. Mood Indigo on July 6th, Cindy Wolf and Mark Bilyeu on the 13th, Candy Lee and the Sweets on July 20th, and Barrett Baber on the 27th. It's going to be so much fun, and any Sunday you'll know where to find us.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
if there is a moving van in the driveway next door, your new neighbor may be the 500,000th resident of the four counties included in the Northwest Arkansas Metropolitan Statistical Area. The milestone is based on a best guess using daily population growth numbers since the last census and added to the most recent census estimate. In reality, the 500,000th person may have already moved to the area or been born or may not arrive until next month. But the averages suggest Northwest Arkansas crosses the half-million mark today. To discuss what 500,000 people means, Ozarks at-large Kyle Kellums invited three people into the Furman Garner studio. Mike Malone, president and CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council. Mideya Reith, executive director of Arkansas United Community Coalition. And Rob Brothers, the home region program director at the Walton Family Foundation. Mike Malone says it is amazing to consider the region has hit the 500,000 people threshold.
I had to recalculate and recalculate because I couldn't believe it was such a big number. But it's due to a number of factors. Natural rate of growth. So more births than deaths occur in most regions, and ours is certainly no exception there. And then what we have that is fairly unique to our region and some of the other fast-growing areas around the country is this net in-migration. So we have so many more people that move into Northwest Arkansas as opposed to moving out, and that's actually about 14 new residents per day due to net in-migration in that average. So that's a real testament to the quality of life, the great schools, the great jobs, the economic opportunities that are here. That's why the in-migration is such a significant piece of the growth here.
Perhaps the most visible effect of a growing region is to get on Interstate 49. There certainly seemed to be more cars than there were yesterday, and more yesterday than the day before that. But I'm curious, what do you think growing as fast and continuing to grow has meant and can mean for Northwest Arkansas?
Well, obviously, it taxes our infrastructure, roadways, certainly being one of the chief complaints. But all of the utilities, whether they be electric, water, they're all impacted by that kind of rapid growth. But what a great problem to have. We have a place where people want to come to, and very few people want to leave because of the quality of life and the economic opportunity.
I'd also add to that the opportunities that there have been for business and entrepreneurship because of this. Just the pure economics of having more people means that there's better prospects for entrepreneurs and others to set up businesses and industries, and hence we see more diversity than we would have imagined 2 decades ago, I know, when I was growing up here in this area. And with that, this immigration growth as well that has contributed to this of individuals from abroad, who have been a tremendous part of this growth effort, seeing a diversity in those ranges of businesses, which I really think brings a broader potential to our region. And then from the government's perspective, serving on the State Board of Education and being able to see the kind of funds that our public school systems have up here in comparison to so many of the regions of the state, because we have these larger populations, larger millages, these wonderful quality schools and such, really has had this wonderful ripple effect for the broader population.
That's a really great point. I was thinking about how the growth drives expansion of amenities, art centers, art museums, performing arts venues, but the tax resources, the revenues that are available to invest in education are because the money follows the students in large part. It's a great point. And if you look around, the growth is driving infrastructure, it's driving culture, investment in arts and culture and entertainment, and quality life amenities that we're all enjoying.
So 500,000 now? Any projections?
We're just celebrating hitting this milestone. I have no idea where the next milestone. When will it hit the
next? Is there any way to know, I guess?
Not precisely, but what I do know is that because of the quality of jobs here, the strength of our employers here, and the quality of life, we're going to see rapid growth. And so it's incumbent on our political leaders, our community leaders, our civic organizations to make sure that as we know we're going to continue to grow, that we do our best to do it in a way that welcomes everybody, that we do it in a friendly way, that we do it in a smart way, so that we're thoughtful about where we're going as a region.
And Mike, I would add to that that I think that our leadership, our business leadership, civic leadership, elected leaderships, understanding and willingness to work together as a region is I think paramount to the success that we have had and that we'll continue to have, I think.
And I would add to that as well the inclusion of the diversity that has very much spurred this population in those conversations, and being able to support an environment where those individuals also have a seat in the table in terms of really helping this region bring itself to this fuller potential. I think we've seen a series of articles in the last few weeks bringing to point that we've had a growth in whether it's our Hispanic population, our Marshallese population, our African American, but those have not then been reflected in our elected office. And so also a space where we can be able to encourage leadership at all levels, whether it's running for office or whether it's serving on the boards and councils of these nonprofits and civic organizations, whether it's just volunteering and getting involved. But the integration and inclusion are going to be key factors.
You may not have the answer to this. Is there any sort of timetable that you can look at other communities that may have grown in not just the population like Northwest Arkansas has over the last few years, but also become more diverse at the same time? Is there a sociological expected lag time between, you know, the proper representation of all people on nonprofit boards?
I had demographers quote to me at times two generations or such, but I don't think it's going to take that long for Arkansas. I actually think the reality is whether it's been running for office or inclusion or such has just been more investing in this pipeline of leadership, actually asking individuals, seeking them, supporting them. I know that's one thing that my nonprofit actively does, the Northwest Arkansas Council, doing a wonderful job with several of their initiatives and doing that. And I think it's that focused attention. Many times we forget that leadership, a lot of times it's about building a profile for that individual, getting them exposure, name exposure, things like this. And I think what we've seen thus far hasn't been reflective, if some have liked to insinuate, of a lack of Northwest Arkansans' willingness to embrace diversity and such, but more just the natural of individuals having to be tested, having to be able to get out there, get their feet wet and such. And I think we're going to see a lot more rapid diversity reflective at all levels in the very near future, in years, a couple years, I would say, versus a couple generations. I do not think it'll take that long for Arkansas.
Maria, I agree with you, and I'm very encouraged in the evolution of this process. While there's not been a high level of success at elected offices, we've seen a lot of people that are standing for election, and it's a process that builds. We've had some key appointed positions, and I think it's very healthy for Northwest Arkansas.
How much room for improvement is there that the communities in this area work together?
There's always room for improvement, but when you look at the perspective that I've had over the last 32 years or so, it's dramatically better. I think there is still room for Friday night lights on the football field. There is still room for each community to tout its own particular flavor. But I think the realization that together, that anything good that happens in Bentonville is a boon to Fayetteville. Anything good that happens in Fayetteville is a boon to Rogers. We are a region, and I think people realize and understand that. And many of the people that are moving here, when you ask them, where do you live, they don't say, oh, I live in Fayetteville or Johnson. They say, hey, I live in Northwest Arkansas.
And I think when you drill that down to the level of families, I know many families that I work with, it's not uncommon that they may live in Rogers but work in Springdale, or they live in Fayetteville, or one member of their family may live in Fayetteville but work in Bentonville, and vice versa. So there's the realities of individuals making choices about, again, the strengths of the town and what might make sense for them or schools or such, but then the opportunities, work opportunities, and the fact that there has been that sort of economic collaboration, this this infrastructure collaboration. I think when we look at places where we can continue to improve, I think sometimes there's certain amenities that are necessary, I think, to bring that regionalism to the fuller level. And public transportation, I think, is a perfect example where I know that there have been those conversations, but more that can be done. The reality is that where this may be a booming and thriving region of the state in terms of population and economy, there are still individuals that are still struggling to put food on the table, that may not have the same access to cars or other luxuries as others. And I definitely know that the correlation within the communities that I work, whether it's our African American or immigrant community and stuff, these are some of the sincere realities that they face. So the extent to which that we talk about regional cooperation, but one that really does reflect all the various needs and individuals without prejudice to class and such, that's really what's going to lift up, because these same businesses require those individuals to work in those factories or in those poultry lines and such. And so it's in the region's benefits to increase that accessibility at all levels.
If you don't have dependable transportation and you live, say, in Lincoln or Prairie Grove and you know of a job in Rogers, it's really hard to get there right now.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Or even higher education opportunities.
Exactly.
There's a lot of individuals I know that because of their realities, having to work full-time, maybe multiple jobs, that want to take advantage of going to school at NWAC or take some courses at the University of Arkansas. But that one car is being occupied by the family member that's working the night shift. So then having access for them to continue their own sort of growth and learning.
And I like the example you gave with Lincoln and Prairie Grove, and I'm encouraged because this year, last winter, the Washington County Quorum Court added some funds to Ozark Regional Transit for them to expand out into Washington County. And so they're soon to launch, maybe have already launched, a route that's going to run out toward Lincoln, and it's going to run toward Elkins, and that will provide some better connections for folks. But it'll only run a couple times a day. The frequency's not there. The connections aren't there. We've still got to do much more to invest in our transit system. But we've got to start, especially on the route you mentioned. Some of the other jurisdictions also added money. Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, and Bentonville all added resources to Ozark Transit this year. Benton County, however, didn't, and we've got some more room to grow there.
I'm just curious, when you talk to people outside of Northwest Arkansas, be it inside the state or outside the state, what do you hear? Do you hear back what people know or think about this region? Is it something they know about?
For my organization, my nonprofit, we serve 17 communities across Arkansas. So I do find myself quite a bit in the capital or the Delta or South Arkansas. And what I frequently hear is Northwest Arkansas is a beast of its own, relating, I think, in large part to the growth and the acknowledgement of the growth. But also the reality is that what has been happening here really has been unique in many parts and many ways to what's happening in the rest of the state. We've seen some growth in Little Rock, but not to this nearly to this level. And obviously, we've seen the exact opposite trend with the Delta in the South, which has been the flight of so many individuals and industries from that community. And in some ways, with that concentration around Little Rock and Northwest Arkansas. What concerns me with that dialogue, though, at times, and this is also working in the realm of politics in our state, is when they want to say, well, the needs and the issues of Northwest Arkansas don't concern the rest of the state. And that's inaccurate. We are just as much Arkansan as everyone else. Maybe our accent is a little different. Maybe our commitments to our teams, the sport teams, are a little different than other parts of the state. Obviously, different universities, other parts of the state, different pride, although we like to think everyone does get behind our Razorbacks throughout the state. But I do think there are a lot of benefits for Arkansas being able to look at Northwest Arkansas as part of the region and not an exception to the rule or an exception to what's happening to the rest. And I think that's where sometimes our colleagues in the other parts of the state are a little erred.
One of the statistics, and I'm a numbers geek, I admit it, but one of the statistics that always amazes me is the last census count, they had a figure that showed the percentage of Northwest Arkansans that were born in Arkansas. That number is 44%. So 44% of our 500,000 residents were born in Arkansas. That means 56% of the Northwest Arkansans were born in other states or other countries. In fact, 10% were born in other countries. you compare that to Central Arkansas, and it's in the center of the state, so some of it's just having to do with geography, but almost two-thirds of Central Arkansas's residents were born in Arkansas. We're all Arkansans. That was a really good point. It's just some took a different path to get here.
Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellams talked to Mike Malone, president and CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council, Maria Reith, executive director of Arkansas United Community Coalition, and Rob Brothers, the home region program director at the Walton Family Foundation. It is estimated the 500,000th resident of Northwest Arkansas arrives today. A contest inspired by the milestone is sponsored by the Northwest Arkansas Council and asks residents to post a photo representing the region with the hashtag NWA500K. We'll have more about that on Weekend Ozarks at Large, Sunday morning at 9 here on KUAF.
I'm Robin Young. Have you ever thought about taking a vacation to look for sounds? Spooky. What is that?
Well, that's booming or singing or musical sand dunes.
The sounds of sand and more next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now coming up next here on KUAF.
Washington Regional Hospice presents the 23rd Annual Summer Garden Party June 14th at 6 p.m. at the Fayetteville home of Kim and Bob Whitfield. This West Meets South fundraiser will include live music from Back Road Anthem, food, beverages, auctions, and more. 444-9888 for tickets or online wregional.com/hospicegardenparty for more information.
Walton Arts Center presents the 14th Annual Art of Wine Festival, June 12th through the 14th. This three-evening event features a winemaker's dinner and two different tastings, over 400 wines from around the world, and food from area restaurants. Art of Wine tickets and information available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600.
A listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Berryville.
And we do want to announce a winner for our giveaway. Yesterday, we offered a giveaway for four tickets to Trike Theater's production of Here Comes Gosling, four vouchers to any Northwest Arkansas Naturals baseball game, and four vouchers to any Malco Movie Theater. So congratulations to Jennifer Spillers.
Was there a question?
Nope. We just asked people to send us an email saying they wanted tickets.
That works. Congratulations.
Made it nice and easy. So congratulations to Jennifer. We will be in touch. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grahatum.
I'm Christina Karnatz.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. We'll end today's show with some music by Don't Stop Please. They're one of the several local bands performing at a community radio fundraiser tonight at Georgia's Majestic Lounge. You can find out more at georgiasmajesticlounge.com. Thanks again for listening, and have a great Wednesday.